So our first speaker is Stephen Alderman, who co-founded the Peter C. Alderman Foundation. Working with ministries of health, the foundation trains indigenous healthcare personnel in post-conflict countries and operates psychotrauma clinics to treat traumatic depression. The foundation works in Cambodia, Uganda, and Kenya, and has trained 1,000 mental health professionals from 22 countries and operates 7 clinics. The foundation was named one of the most effective philanthropies by Barron's, received the $100,000 Purpose Prize, and Liz and Steve Alderman were awarded the Presidential Citizens Medal. Stephen?
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here today. On September, well, here I have to. Sorry. I have absolutely no relationships to disclose. On September 11th, 2001, our youngest son, Peter, was attending a conference at Windows on the World in the North Tower of the World Trade Center when the terrorists struck. He was 25 years old when he died. We, as a family, decided to honor his memory by dealing with people who had survived mass violence and terrorism, but because of emotional problems, specifically traumatic depression, PTSD, were unable to lead their lives. Dr. Maltby told you, work in Southeast Asia and Africa, and today I'll talk to you about Uganda. Historically, Uganda had, since declaring its independence from England in 1962, Uganda has known 4.5 decades of civil war. Every region of the country has been affected. The war du jour for the past 2 decades has been the Lord's Resistance Army, in the north, and from 1987 to 2008. The upshot of that war is that 1.7 million people were put into IDP camps, internally displaced persons camps, by the government, who said they would protect them. They did not. The other problem was that more than 35,000 children had been kidnapped by the Lord's Resistance Army, the boys to serve as soldiers, the girls usually for wives of colonels and more. Looking at things from a public health perspective, in Kampala, the University of Makerere Department of Psychiatry had a 25-man-woman department who also had experience with massively traumatized population for more than 4.5 decades. They all had MDs, and many of them had PhDs in such things as traditional healing, anthropology, and the like. The problem was that while there was a lot of expertise here in the South, in Kampala, the remainder of the population was rural, scattered around the countryside, and here was where the war had happened. So what we endeavored to do was to ship expertise to where the population at risk was. And over the next 4 years, we founded, working together, clinics, Tororo, Gulu, Kitgum, Arua, and Soroti. And here they are ringing the north. We left Bali, Tororo, and this is where we work. This is a complicated slide. Look at the bottom. Okay, what's going on here? Look at the bottom. Each clinic has a staff an interdisciplinary staff of four people, a psychiatric social worker, a psychiatric nurse, a bachelor's level counselor, and a PCO, that's a psychiatric clinical officer, which is very similar to our physician's assistant, and he has prescriptive powers. He can prescribe drugs. These are, and this is the pattern for every clinic. They are supervised by, if you look at the next row up, the yellow, visiting psychiatrists at least once a month. Okay. Here's our Gulu clinic. The upstairs, the top of the building is the inpatient facility. The bottom is outpatient. What you see here in the waiting room in the red shirts are three child soldiers. The bottom left is one of our psychiatrists, Dr. Thomas Oyuk, with a child soldier. And on the far lower right is a young man who was a child soldier, had bilateral short sleeve amputations of his upper extremities. Okay, people like me, traumatologists, have an ongoing discussion of what model best explains what's happening in terms of the mental health and psychosocial consequences of trauma. And on one hand is the biomedical model, very simple. A pathogen such as war-related stressors produces symptoms in war-affected people when they or a war-affected population. And when they rise to the syndrome level, you get such things as PTSD and traumatic depression. The problem with this model is that it completely ignores cultural context. On the other hand, there's a sociocultural model, which I happen to like. War environment produces functional impairment in populations. This is defined by the local population. These are the people who define what is normal to do in their society. Okay? Walking a mile in America is fine to go through a shopping center or a shopping mall. If you can only walk a mile in Uganda, you're not going to get water and you probably will starve to death. The second thing I like is that these stakeholders, the local people, define how badly the society suffers from their villagers, their countrymen's inability to function. So they're able to tell you what the societal burden is. How bad is it hurting us? And finally, they become the arbiters of any intervention that we do. Has this thing worked, whatever it is? Does it make everyday life better for their countrymen? So our objective was to develop pilot and field test a context-specific instrument, which would measure functional impairment in northern Uganda. To that effect, we interviewed 595 attendees at Gulu and Kitgum clinics, and from that we developed a 40-item scale. We then ran focus groups at all four clinics on the scale, and finally, we did consultation with our professional staff to see what was feasible and what was acceptable, both to them and our patients. Here's a picture of a focus group in Arua, and here's one in Gulu. These were done at outreach sites. And here's the 40-item scale, which covered a lot of ground, but of course is very cumbersome. And what we were able to do was to boil it down. Two things to note here is in low-income countries, there are gender-specific roles, okay? They differ, okay? Not so much in the United States, not in high-income countries so much, but if you don't include this, then you're really missing the boat. The second thing that I'd like to tell you is we tried to do a binary, a simple yes, no. I can do it or I can't do it, but and there's some decent data on this, that to look at change over time, you really need an intermediary, and it's yes, I can do it, but not like before. All right, the results from our field testing, The scale was administered to 514 adults, 86 children and adolescents. If we looked at the gender differences, they were approximately the same. Face and content validity, we found was, we in terms of translating, back translating, I think this is, can you hear me?
No.
Hello?
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Well, this is a different one.
That's something else.
This is a different one? No? Hello? On this side, it's okay. Because our clinical staff were born and grew up in the north of Uganda, we had no problems with translation, back translation. In other words, they were the gold standard. Okay, what they did was contextually correct, was culturally correct, because they lived there. In terms of reliability, our internal consistency was good. Our inter-rater agreement was good. We were able to tease out two areas. One, by doing a mathematical maneuver called principal component analysis, and we found there were two factors. One was physical functioning, the other was social functioning, and here they are. The first three, ability to perform field activities, household activities, do your job or attend school, were physical functioning. Social functioning was the ability to liaise with the community, interact, and finally we had to include an item on self-care. All right, so with this instrument in hand, what we did was to do an intervention which was based essentially on cognitive behavioral therapy, and we did serial determinations of function using our local function test. The SRQ, or the self-reported questionnaire 20, which we adapted and validated in Uganda for depression, and the Harvard trauma questionnaire, again, validated with cut points in Uganda, and we did these serially. Before the intervention, 3 months and 6 months later, following it. And what we saw is, as you look at the red and green lines, were in 80% of patients, there was a significant decrease in symptom load, while there was a concomitant, if you see the blue line, increase in function. Therefore, we concluded that a locally developed function assessment tool we think is reliable and valid in the north of Uganda, and moreover, we think this tool can be used to monitor and evaluate psychosocial interventions. Thank you.